Welcome back to the Celtics Journal podcast. If you're a new listener, welcome. Follow us on Twitter at Celtics Journal and on Instagram at The Celtics Journal. Today I'm joined by our guest, Mike DiPrisco. He covers the Wizards for NBC Sports Washington. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm excited to be here. I'm a little tired after the trade deadline. I'm kind of, you know, exhausted from thinking about all these trades, watching them come in, but, you know, it's over. We can just talk about hoops now. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, a lot of trades happened yesterday. 16 total, in fact. What was one of your favorite trades?
I got to go with Aaron Gordon to the Nuggets. I love the fit. I think they needed to get a versatile defender who can guard some of the better forwards in the Western Conference. I think Aaron Gordon does that. And he can score off the ball, play off of Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. I think with him, Murray, Jokic, and Michael Porter, whatever he can give them, I think they're going to be trouble.
Yeah, if the Nuggets can get back to what they were in the bubble, they are going to be scary. I think definitely with those four guys you mentioned, and then also Monty Morris and Will Barton off the bench. So I think they're definitely positioned for a playoff push. But we're definitely here to talk about the Celtics today. So in segment one today, we're going to talk about the Evan Fournier trade. We're going to analyze that trade, talk about what we like, the fit, different lineups for the Celtics. In segment two, we're going to talk about the Tice trade. That one hurt, but it was necessary, and we're going to talk about that. So, and then in segment three, we're going to talk about what Danny said today on 98.5, and also our TPE options later on this offseason and the buyout market as well, because the Celtics were also linked to Andre Drummond. So we're going to take a quick break and get started.
Accelerates into the middle. Evan off the glass and in for the lead. 112-111. And a timeout by Phoenix.
All right, so we're going to talk about the Evan Fournier trade. So the deal was Jeff Teague and 2 second-round picks to the Magic in exchange for Evan Fournier. What are your thoughts on this trade, Mike?
I think the trade itself was a good move. I think the Celtics had to do something at the deadline with the way they've been sputtering lately. They fell 2 games below .500. They need a scoring punch off the bench. Fournier definitely brings that. He's a walking bucket, averaging career high 19.7 points a game, almost 20. At a considerable volume, he's taking almost 7 threes a game, knocking down 38% of those. He's a guy that can come in and just, you know, help the Jays keep the offense afloat when their shots aren't falling. Because I think we found that when these guys don't have it going, the Celtics don't have much of a chance unless Kemba Walker starts hitting his threes left and right. You can't really bank on that. So I think 2 second-round picks, Jeff Teague is just getting rid of Jeff Teague is probably an upgrade in itself. For Fournier is pretty good. The only question mark I would have is that you're using $17 million of the traded player exception for a guy who's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. So if the Celtics can't bring him back, I'm going to question that move even more, because you're using a considerable asset to bring in a guy for 30 games. But if they can bring him back, I like it a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a risky move, but Danny Ainge this morning, he actually said he plans to retain Evan Fournier. I mean, I know, like, what else is he supposed to say after, you know, using the TPE on this guy? But I do believe it, and I think he fits in the offense. Like you said, he's a scoring shooting guard. He can create his own shot. He's great off the catch and shoot. He can cut to the basket whenever he wants. He's a quick guard, and he's going to play really well next to the Jays. I'm really excited to see what he can do for us. Like I said on Twitter today, I've been watching his highlights all night. Like, I didn't sleep. I was watching his France versus USA highlights. The deep cuts. Yeah. So I'm really excited for him. 46% from the field, 39 from three, 80 from the line. Like, these splits are really great for someone that you're bringing in for Jeff Teague in 2 second-round picks.
What you said, he's a scorer. He's more than a shooter. He's off the dribble. He can come around handoffs and knock down shots, make passes out of the pick and roll. Like, this guy can do a lot more than just shoot.
Yeah, he was passing to Rudy Gobert a lot in those FIBA games. He all, like what I said earlier with him off the catch and shoot. Like he shoots 38%, 39% from three, but he shoots 36.5% off the catch and shoot, and he shoots four per game, which is great. And I think that's exactly what the Celtics need. Like we need that catch and shoot player to kind of come in and just hit down. He just needs to knock down shots. That's all he needs to do. And
just a guy for Jason Tatum to throw it to.
Exactly. And,
yeah.
When he gets doubled, he can bail him out. Exactly.
And it's not Semi Ojeleye.
Yeah, exactly. It's not Semi Ojeleye. It's not Javonte Green. And we don't have to rely on Carson Edwards.
No, you do. You don't want to do that.
No. But he's definitely a high intensity guy. He shows emotion on the court, and I think he's gonna get in the face of defenders. And I think he's gonna bring a huge improvement and upgrade to this team.
No, of course. And you know, you mentioned off the catch. I took a look at those numbers too. 36% off the catch on considerable volume. He gets better when he's taking a dribble into that shot.
Mm-hmm.
He's taken 31 three-pointers off of the dribble, off of one dribble, and he's hitting 45% of them. And it's usually come in those handoff situations where he's coming around a screen, taking it from the big man, get a little bit of space and let it fly. He's one of the best. He's one of the best offensive players in handoff situations in the NBA. Mm-hmm. He's in the 94th percentile of all players in the NBA in handoffs, and I think that's something that the Celtics offense has really lacked. You know, when they're moving the ball side to side with the Jays, it's just kind of a pick and roll isolation. Mm-hmm. See if what they can make out of nothing. This guy, you can kind of just run some weak side actions for, and get some easy buckets.
Yeah, I think like what you said, like when he's coming off the screen, like he will either dribble into the paint and he can get to the basket and get his own shot, or he'll get to the line, or he'll take a step back and nail a three. Like he can do both, and it's not like he's gonna drive to the basket this time. Like I hope he gets fouled. It's like this guy can actually make layups. He can make tough shots. I just really hope he resigns, and that's the thing. And what can we resign him for is the real question, because right now he's making about $17 million a year. And to resign a player like him, it all depends on how he plays this year. I hope he plays well for our sake, but at the same time, you got to hope that he kind of takes a step down so that we can kind of get him on a discount, and then he takes his kind of leap next year. And I also kind of
shooting's expensive.
Yeah, shooting is expensive, and I also hope that's the other thing. I hope he doesn't shoot too much. I don't want him to kind of do the Marcus Smart thing where he kind of gets a little bit too high in the volume of shots. I know he's definitely a different shooter. He's a better shooter, better scorer, but I don't want the Jays to feel I don't feel like he's intruding on their shot making and shot creation, but just want to be careful. Just want to tread lightly.
Yeah, and that's the challenge with anybody that comes in to a new team, especially with two all-stars like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. But, you know, it's not like they're looking for a defensive upgrade. They need offense. They need a guy to come and take shots and make shots.
Yeah.
So I think I'd rather Fournier come in just taking shots all over the place and find his fit from there. But, you know, it's interesting. And this is the question that I kept asking myself, and I'm curious what you think, is that with the TPE, I guess people thought that the guy they bring in is at the level of Gordon Hayward or maybe even better long term. Is this a guy that can put them over the hump of where they to get to where they want to be, you know, contending with the Nets and the Bucks at the top of the East? My answer is probably no. But, you know, I guess he does fit what you would want.
He definitely doesn't move the needle enough where you're like, oh, well, now we can compete. It's kind of like it gets us closer where it made us shuffle the lineup a little bit. Like Daniel Tice is now gone, Javonte Green's now gone, Jeff Teague's now gone. So all these guys who were kind of just taking up minutes are now, they're elsewhere. And now you can reallocate those minutes to guys like Robert Williams, who Danny Ainge talked about today. Like he told us that his role will be expanded now that Tice is gone. Grant Williams, another beneficiary of this trade, he can kind of slide into the backup center role, but the kind of filler minute center role where he can kind of come into his own role. And I think we all kind of want to see that because everyone says that Grant Williams sucks, but he's 43% off the catch and shoot. He's 50% off pull-up three-pointers. Like, this guy, he knows how to shoot the basketball, and if he can find a role in this team, why wouldn't you take that?
Yeah, I like me some Grant Williams. I think playing up for him, playing at the five, or playing at the four with a smaller big next to him will do him good. I think he's underutilized as just a spot-up shooter. He can do a lot more with the ball in his hands.
Yeah, not to get on the Grant tangent too much, but let's just talk lineups real quick because we're going to need a couple different lineups with Kemba kind of, you know, being out every so often, every other game, if we have some back-to-backs. So my initial lineup, so when Kemba is in, I wanted to run Kemba, Smart, Brown, Tatum, and Rob. And that's like the starting lineup, but the lineup I really want to run is having Grant at the five and have...
More Grant.
Yeah, more Grant at the five. No, not more Grant at the five, just straddle those minutes so that we can play a little small ball in the beginning of the game and then have Rob come off the bench with Peyton Pritchard because I know those two work well together off pick and roll. And they do. And as a second unit, I think that's really strong having Evan Fournier come off the bench. Because you have a scorer there, and then you can straddle the minutes with Tatum and Brown, whatever star you really want there. But I think Tatum's the best one to start with, and then you can kind of run with that. But I was kind of curious on your thoughts on what the best lineup for the Celtics would be.
No, those both sound good to me. I'm always a proponent of going smaller. I was thinking about before the deadline, if the Celtics traded for Aaron Gordon, I feel like they should just play him at the five and go super switchy, but no, I think that's a decent idea, to take Rob and one of the Jays out, and bring in Fournier and Grant Williams in a way. I just think it'll be nice to bring somebody off the bench that the Jays don't have to necessarily carry out there. It'll be because I feel like there are certain stretches in the game, 5 or 6 minute stretches where every basket they get is just an absolute battle.
Yeah, I know.
So I think it's just Fournier can come in, you can run some plays for him, and maybe preserve Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum a little bit so that they don't have to go full Michael Jordan just to get a bucket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and preserving Jaylen and Jason is definitely important this season because we have them locked up for the next couple of years, and we want to make sure that they're healthy. Not saying that this isn't our year, but we need to kind of have that big picture in mind. But what do you think Romeo Langford's role is with the team right now? Now that Evan Fournier is here, we have that bona fide, backup shooting guard, I guess you could say. So what do you think his role is with the team? With Aaron Naismith also kind of getting a sigh of relief with this deal too.
Yeah, he doesn't have to go to Orlando. He can stay. He can stay in Boston. No, I think Naismith and Langford are kind of fighting for the same minutes right now. I think with Fournier as like one of the backup wings, it's really between, depending on matchup, one of those two to get those minutes. I like Romeo Langford a lot. What I saw last year, we haven't seen him this year. He has a lot of offensive potential that we haven't seen yet. I think he surprised me on how well he picked up the defense last year. But I think, it would be in the best interest of the Celtics for him to get minutes and play well, because I think they don't have a lot of young players that, move the needle other than Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Robert Williams. I mean, if you want to count Marcus Smart, too, he's like 27 now, but...
Yeah.
I think just in a... you could bring him on to play some defense and handle the ball next to Fournier or Pritchard in those lineups, because unlike Naismith, he's probably better with the ball in his hands. So I would see him in that kind of little role, but it's not substantial right now. He has to earn every second he gets out there because we barely seen him. He's only played 30 games.
Yeah, I know. And it's a shame, too, because right when he got healthy, he got sick with,
right. with the COVID. Right. He can't catch a break, COVID. This
so,
kid.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know what his minutes are going to look like when he does come back.
Yeah.
I'm kind of hoping that we see a little bit more of Aaron Nesmith. I really like his toughness and the way mm-hmm. he gets after the ball. And Peyton Pritchard, I think he's going to get some more playing time, too. What do you think about him?
Yeah, especially with Jeff Teague gone, we don't have to pretend that we don't have exactly. to pretend who the backup point guard is anymore with this team. It's Peyton Pritchard. Give him more minutes. Let him run the offense. He's good on the pick and roll. He finds Robert Williams a lot. He's a good shooter. There's no question about his shooting. And he's a feisty defender too. I like him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, him and Rob have this weird chemistry, right? Like every time they go for a pick and roll, I'm expecting Peyton Pritchard to throw a lob.
Yeah. Yeah, just throw it up to the top of the backboard. Yeah, he'll
just
go get it.
Throw it in the vicinity and he'll come down with it.
Unbelievable player he is.
Unbelievable player. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the Daniel Theis trade and how that impacts the Celtics moving forward.
Oh, big finish. Robert Williams, Time Lord, can throw it down.
All right, and we're back. So we're going to talk about Daniel Theis leaving the Celtics in a trade to the Chicago Bulls. So Boston, we needed to get under the luxury tax, so we had to make a deal. And Daniel Theis was, unfortunately, he got the axe in this. So he is on his way to Chicago along with Javonte Green and $1.3 million worth of cash considerations for Mo Wagner and Luke Kornet. Mike, you watched Mo for quite some time, actually, in Washington. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And what is he going to bring to the Celtics? I know that he's going to bring some toughness, some emotion. He might even get some technicals, but tell us a little bit about Mo Wagner.
Yeah, definitely a few technicals. I watched him over the last year and a half with his time in Washington. The one thing I will say about Mo Wagner is you will never be in a situation where you're wondering where he is on the floor. He's always going to put his stamp on the game with his energy. He's very vocal out on the floor, one of the louder players on the Wizards. He gives you some great bench celebrations. He's learning how to be one of the elite floppers in the game. Takes a lot of charges. Not as many as he used to. I think the refs have caught on to him. But he's just an energy big. And he reminds me a lot of Kelly Olynyk. I know Celtics fans love Kelly. Well, some Celtics fans love Kelly Olynyk. Just a guy that is going to give you everything he's got for better or worse. Sometimes you're going to want a little less, but he's going to give you 100% no matter what.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited for him after watching some of his highlights. I mean, I really liked him when he was at Michigan. I watched him a lot in the tournament, and he was just one of those high-intensity guys, high-energy players that just, like, he mm-hmm. brings that toughness, emotion, heart to the team that you can't replace. And not like Marcus Smart, but he gives that same energy where he's going to argue, he's going to fight, he's going to get your team amped up, and it's ultimately the guy that you want in your team. And I think the Celtics yeah. were looking for those types of players. But when I was watching some of his highlights, he sets a lot of good screens, like high pick and rolls, and then rolls right to the basket. And he's just a downhill player, so you know exactly where he's going to be, and he can just dunk it at will. Like he's not raw in that we kind of have to like teach that or kind of hide that. Like he's actually good at it. So him and Kemba are going to work together well, I'm pretty sure. What do you think about that? How did he do with Bradley Beal and Russ?
I think, well, it was interesting because the Wizards were really struggling leading up until the All-Star break. And with Thomas Bryant out for the season, Scott Brooks had been playing around with the center rotation a lot. Mm. So he just went for Mo Wagner at starting center. He just needed something, and he went to him. They won, you know, 5 games in a row, something like that. And then they won, I think, 7 of 8 leading up into the break. And then when he came out of the rotation due to matchups, they started losing again. So he's kind of the guy that you put into the game when you need a spark. And he's almost always able to give that to you. He has his limitations. Like, he's not this superb talent. I mean, if he was great, the Celtics wouldn't be getting him for, you know, next to nothing. He's also a free agent at the end of the year. The Wizards declined his team option. So there's lumps that come with his game. But like what you said, he's a guy that the Celtics probably need. And he's cut from the same cloth that a Marcus Smart is cut from. Like, those two will probably get along pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So in 15 minutes per game, he averaged 7 points, 3 rebounds, and an assist on 50% from the field, 31 from three, and 79 from the line. So he can shoot the three, but he's not going to, like, wow you. Like, whenever you were watching him, were you kind of like, oh, he's going to take a three? Or were you kind of like, oh, like, he's open. All right, cool. He can hit this. He can knock this down.
No, yeah, he doesn't force it. He doesn't force his offense at all. He's a very willing passer. And what you said earlier reminded me of something. You said he's a very downhill player, and I agree with that. But that's not always – he's a very downhill player in the sense that he's not always in control of himself.
He's kind of like Robert Williams, but a lot less.
He's just a lot less graceful. Like, he's going to come barreling down the lane, and he won't be able to put on the brakes. I always say he's in a constant state of falling down.
He's a bowling ball. Just,
right, and he's just trying to fit as much basketball in between his falls.
Yeah.
that's how I would describe his game.
No, that's good, and I'm actually, like, really excited for him now after, like I said, after watching his highlights. It's most likely that he's going to slide into that definitive third center role, which is, like we said earlier, it's kind of going to allow Rob to play that starting role. Tristan, he kind of gets that defined role as, like, the second big. And then I think Grant Williams, like I said earlier, he's going to slide into that third center role at some point. He's just not ready yet. And I think this allows him to get some reps there.
Are you excited at the fact that there is a definite third center now? Because I feel like with Tice, Rob, and Tristan, there was just a bunch of number two centers being the number one on a given night.
Yeah, so I think we need to address this for a lot of Celtics fans. They might be upset that on the surface we gave up Daniel Tice for Mo Wagner and Luke Kornet. Are you kidding me? Well, when you think about it and you unpack it, now there's a little bit less, not quarreling, but there's a little bit less challenge at the center position. Like, you now are able to, like, what everybody wants to do, start Robert Williams, or at least give him more minutes. And then you kind of know what Tristan Thompson's role, because before he's out with health and safety, but you didn't really know when he was coming in or if they're going to throw a double big lineup at you and he was just going to be ineffective. So now we have more definition in this lineup, and the roster and the depth chart is kind of not thinning out, but it's just role playing. And situation matters. Everybody now has a role that they can kind of come into, and when we make this playoff push, because we're going to end up making the playoffs, we're going to make a push, and we're going to be ready at this point because we're going to have a defined team, and I'm really excited for it. But what do you think the rest of the season kind of holds for the team if this lineup stays the same? Like, I mean, we should probably quick mention Luke Kornet probably going to get waived.
Yes.
I don't think he has a spot on this team. But what do you think?
Probably not. No, he probably doesn't. But the only reason I think they keep him around is because Thompson's in health and safety protocols still. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in this kind of season, you don't just give away depth if you've got it, you know. Mm-hmm. But what was your – so you asked what the outlook is for these guys right now?
What do you think the outlook is for this team with this roster with a more defined role moving forward? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think this team's definitely better than they were before the deadline. There's no question about that because, you know, you're adding Fournier. What's funny is if you told me last year at the end of the playoffs where they went to the conference finals and lost a very frustrating series to Miami, if you told me this year Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are having career years, Robert Williams has taken the leap and become the best big on the team, Peyton Pritchard's contributing, and you're adding Evan Fournier into the mix at the trade deadline, I was like, top two seed, what's the problem? But there just seems to be some internal problems with this team in terms of just the things that you expect from a Brad Stevens coach team. They're just not doing. Like, they're not defending at a high level. They're not pressuring the ball. They're not moving the ball around on offense. There's just a lot of isolation going on in hero ball. So I think the roster itself is better to the point where if they can play their brand of basketball that we saw last year, I think they could be a team that makes a late push and becomes, you know, this squad that nobody wants in the playoffs because we know what they can do, and now they're playing well.
Right. How much of this not disappointment of a season, but the struggles that we've had this season, how much of it leans on Brad Stevens, and how much of it leans on, you know, the COVID schedule, having Jason Tatum out for a short period of time, and then Marcus Smart, and then Kemba Walker's been in and out and inconsistent. Like, how much of it actually leans on Brad Stevens? Because I know a lot of Celtics fans on Twitter and Instagram, they've been in our mentions, you know, complaining about inconsistency and fire Danny Ainge and fire Brad Stevens. So, like, what do you think? How much of it really leans on Ainge?
Well, yeah, and who knows if they tried to get him to Indiana, too, if it was just like an inside job to get him out of Boston. No, what I think is just, I don't think Brad comes off Scott, like, just comes off without any blame in this situation, and neither does Danny Ainge, because, like you said, with the COVID schedule, Marcus Smart getting hurt and losing Jason Tatum for 2 weeks and just dealing with that. Every team's dealing with that, right? So it's tough to, like, the Lakers don't have LeBron or Anthony Davis for like a month right now. They're struggling. The Celtics aren't the only team that have struggled in that sense, but they've struggled in terms of just not being able to play a sustainable brand of basketball. It just seems like everything they do out there is difficult. They don't get any easy shots. They don't defend consistently. Their body language sucks. Like, I think that falls on the coaches. And it may be tougher to motivate guys to play the right way in this certain environment. I get that. But if Brad can't get his guys to play, I think that falls on him, and it's something that he's going to have to improve on. Which, and this is where I get to the firing part. It's like, why fire the guy when he's proven time and again that he's willing to adjust his coaching style based off of past failures, you know? So it's like that last Kyrie year was a disaster. He couldn't manage the locker room with all these guys that deserve shots. You know, like he changed his coaching staff to make to creating defined roles, and that worked really well last year. So it's just constant adjusting your coaching style. It's something he's been willing to do, and he's such a smart X's and O's guy that, like, who do you replace Brad Stevens with off the top of your head?
Yeah, I was just about to say, like, every time someone says fire Brad Stevens, I always play that game in my head. Okay, sure, fire him. Who are you going to bring in? Like, I can't think of one coach that's available that would be a better X's and not even X's and O's, just a better all around guy, all around locker room chemistry guy than Brad Stevens.
Like, who do you want? Kenny Atkinson?
Yeah, please bring him in. Like, you saw in the Milwaukee game. The Bucks were playing extremely well. Brad calls a timeout. They come out. Marcus hits a three. Bucks call a timeout. Bucks were like, oh, shit. All right, timeout. Saw us come back from 25 points. It almost happened. And that was because of Brad Stevens and this Celtics team that has heart, that has a puncher's chance here. But I think what a lot of people are upset about Brad Stevens is that we always give him excuses, but context matters. Because in our first year with Kyrie, Gordon gets hurt. We go to the Eastern Conference Finals. We almost make the finals. We lose in Game 7. Next year, Gordon's back, so like we have an excuse there. And then the next year, we just have different lineups every year, and those are labeled as excuses rather than actual reasons why the team isn't performing up to its potential. That's a side I'm on. I love Brad Stevens. I love what he brings to the team. He's a smart, brilliant guy, actually.
I mean, 3 conference finals in 4 years
with different teams.
You don't just that doesn't just happen.
Yeah, and people are upset about that, because we're not getting to the finals. But like, look at all the other teams in the league, the other 28 teams or 26 teams, like, that aren't making the conference finals. Like, what are their outlooks? Oh, they're trash because they haven't even made it once, let alone three times.
Patriots really spoiled this town.
Yeah, the Patriots really spoiled this town. Title town, nonetheless, but...
Yeah.
We'll be back. We'll be back. But we will be back after a break, and then we're going to talk about the TPE that we have left and the buyout market, and as the Celtics were linked to Andre Drummond. So we're going to get back into that when we get back, all right? All right, we're back, and to wrap up the show, we're going to talk about the traded player exception that we still have and the buyout market, because we were linked to Andre Drummond. So we had a $28.5 million trade exception from Gordon Hayward. We ended up using $17 million of that on Evan Fournier. But we are hard capped, so we can't use the $11 million that we have left over until the offseason. And that will expire a full calendar year after we acquired the trade exception. But Mike, I got to ask you, what do you think the Celtics are going to do with this buyout market? Because I don't see Andre Drummond being our realistic candidate for us just because of what we just did with trading Daniel Tice. But also, I think he could be a good option to come in and average, you know, 20 rebounds for us if it works out.
Yeah, that's cool. Let's just bring him off the street. Average 20 rebounds, it's no big deal.
Exactly.
But no, the only way I think the Celtics could get Andre Drummond over the other teams he's meeting with, like the Lakers and the Knicks, is by guaranteeing him, you know, a definitive role, some playing time. Maybe not starting, but at least the number two center off the bench, right? So what you just said in the last segment about trading Daniel Tice, it vaults Rob into the number one center spot. It gives Tristan Thompson that clear cut number two role. How it just fits so nicely with Wagner as the third guy, where I think there are better options than Drummond, especially because him and Thompson's skill set kind of overlap, and I'd rather have Thompson for defensive purposes than Drummond. I know there's a lot of people out there that love Drummond and think he's, you know, the second coming of Charles Barkley sometimes, but rebounding isn't as valuable as it used to, and if you're a good rebounder, you have to do other things too. And he doesn't defend the pick and roll very well. He's not that much of an offensive threat. Sure, he's a lob threat, but it's not like the Celtics don't have that. They have probably turning into one of the best lob threats in the game, Robert Williams. So it just doesn't make a ton of sense for me to do that. I'd rather see them go for a guy like Otto Porter if he becomes available, just to provide some wing depth, some more shooting.
Yeah, I think like you said, it's about the fit, and the Celtics do have a better fit at the center position with Robert Williams and Tristan Thompson now, just those two. But there's also better fits for Drummond, too. Like, if we just talk about fit for a second, Yahoo Sports reported that that Andre Drummond is going to listen to the Knicks, Lakers, Celtics, Clippers, and Hornets, who are all interested. Fit-wise, I think the Hornets make the most sense for him. And then the Lakers probably second. I think the Celtics are probably almost last on that list for best fit.
Honestly. Because like with the Hornets, they don't have their center is Cody Zeller-Bismack-Biyombo. He could go in there and start for a playoff team, and if he plays well enough, maybe get a nice contract out of them. With the Lakers, I think there's a fit, but you go to the Lakers if you're trying to win a ring. So like if his one goal is to win a ring, then I guess you go to one of the LA teams. I like the Knicks for him though, because I mean Mitchell Robinson and Nerlens Noel are kind of the centers there. I feel like he could just come in and start right away, and Thibodeau's defense could kind of hide some of the things that he doesn't do well.
Has Mitchell Robinson really been playing that well lately? I haven't seen too much about him. Like last year, he was playing really well, but
I think he's playing well. He's playing well. He got hurt.
Yeah.
So then Nerlens Noel kind of took over the starting job, and it's been a bit of a back and forth ever since.
And that kind of seems like a position
I don't
where
think he's been bad.
Yeah, that's not a position battle that Andre Drummond can't win, I feel like.
Right, right.
But other than Andre Drummond, go ahead.
I had one, another buyout candidate that they may not be in the running for, but what about, you know, he's a big, LaMarcus Aldridge, he's a big, but he does things that the Celtics don't have. So I guess, would you be more open to that if they can convince him to come instead of going to Miami? Or, you know, something along more Otto Porter range?
I honestly, like, we keep coming back to it. I just don't think that the Celtics necessarily need a big. I think if we were to have traded, say, Tristan Thompson and Tice for Al Horford at the trade deadline, that would have been our big center position move.
Yeah.
But I just don't think we need one. I think we're really more worried about the wing depth and just having another scoring playmaker off the bench to, you know, play alongside Evan Fournier now. But I don't see too many of those as buyout candidates. Otto Porter is an interesting one. He's young enough where he can still contribute to a team, but he's old enough where you can kind of, you know, get him as a minimum player on a buyout. And he's still got juice left in the tank.
That's probably the reason why he won't do the buyout.
Yeah, I haven't seen too much of him in Chicago.
He doesn't want to be a minimum guy.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't want that role. And that was something I was worried about with Aaron Gordon, actually, because he looked like he wanted to have, like, the big-time role. And then he would come to Boston and basically come off the bench. And even though he's winning, which was actually funny, he said he was tired of the losing and the culture in Orlando, but he would have come into a Celtics situation where we're losing just as much.
Yeah, they're not exactly winning.
The Celtics aren't exactly. I don't know why he was so eager to come to Boston, but it was nice of him.
Maybe it was just noise to get him to Denver. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of that Aaron Gordon, Nick Vucevic talk, I think all those rumors were just noise to kind of get the Celtics in position to get somebody else, which I'm glad we got him, Fournier.
Especially for the price. I mean, I think with Vucevic and Gordon, the way the packages that they ended up going for, I think the Celtics would have had to give up, like, Marcus Smart or Rob Williams to beat those offers. So if you don't want to do that, 2 second-round picks for Fournier is not bad.
Yeah, what do you think was a fair deal from the Celtics' perspective? Because I know the Nuggets, they offered, what was it, Gary Harris, RJ Hampton, and a first for Aaron Gordon? Or was it 2 firsts?
I think it was two firsts,
yeah. But so, like, just what from do you a think player would have had the match?
That's what I'm saying. I think the one we heard before the deadline was one of Langford and Nesmith and 2 first-round picks, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the leading offer going into the deadline. And then it made the Nuggets one up it by going, you know, we'll do Gary Harris and RJ Hampton and the picks you want. RJ Hampton's a young player. He's a rookie. He's got some promise on his rookie deal. Then the Magic probably went back to the Celtics and are like, here's what the Nuggets are offering. Marcus Smart will get it done for you. And Danny's just like, no thanks.
Yeah.
That's how I saw it.
Yeah. I feel like we were probably like, well, how about Aaron Nesmith and Carson Edwards in 2 first-round picks. And they were like, we'll take Gary Harris.
Right,
or like,
right.
Maybe we threw in Semi Ojeleye instead. And they kind of were just like, we're good.
There's only so much that they could offer. And like we were saying earlier with Langford and Nesmith, like, these guys, Celtics fans may like them because they're two of their two latest lottery picks, right? But they're around the league, they're pretty much zeros right now because they haven't proven anything.
Yeah. Let's circle back to the traded player exception real quick. We're going to have $11 million left over in the offseason to play around with. What do you think we can do with that? Because there's not too many players that make, you know, $11 million that would really move the needle too much. But I know you're a Wizards guy, and Bradley Beal, he could be available. Coming up soon, because the Wizards didn't make too many moves, or quality moves, I should say, at the deadline to to keep him around, it seems. What are your thoughts about him moving forward? Because I know he's definitely a player that's going to be in the headlines very soon.
Yeah, I mean, if it happens the day Bradley Beal becomes available, the entire league just drops what they're doing and starts to plan, right? I mean,
yeah,
they made one move. They traded Mo and Troy Brown Jr. for Daniel Gafford and
Chandler Hutchinson.
Oh, Chandler Hutchinson, right. I mean, Gafford's fine, I think, because Wagner was, like I said, an expiring contract, and Troy Brown Jr. was, you know, the fifth or sixth guy on that team that needed the ball in his hands to be the best version of himself. I think getting a guy like Gafford, who's, you know, this athletic rim protector who can actually play defense, they don't have a lot of centers who can play defense, on a cost control contract, I think that's fine. But if their goal is to make the playoffs, they're 15 and 28 as of this recording. They're 13th in the East, four games behind Chicago, who just got Nick Vucevic for the 10th spot. Like, it's not looking great. So next season is Beal's last year of Beal's contract. I mean, if things don't go well, he's been like the perfect soldier in DC. He's taken the blame for a lot of these losses and just say, like, I got to be better. I got to do this. I got to do that. And he's never wavered from his loyalty to the Wizards.
Yeah, he's loyal, but, man. I salute him to stay under that ownership for so long and deal with the moves that they've made, you know, paying John Wall $42 million a year, you know, like trading for Russell Westbrook and then nothing else to help them out. It just seems disrespectful, to be quite honest. And, I mean, the league has kind of
disrespectful.
Honestly, yeah. Bradley Beal has been disrespected almost his entire career in the NBA.
Probably.
Like, the guy averaged 30 points and didn't make the All-Star team last year.
Yeah, that was crazy.
I hope he finds a better situation, honestly, or at least the Wizards do something to help him out. But I think it definitely helps that Jason Tatum is on the Celtics and it's his best friend in the NBA.
Yeah, so. I think if what you're asking me, if you're asking me,
I'm getting around to the point where can we get Bradley Beal on the same team as Jason Tatum, but also keep Jaylen Brown so that we have this trio of wings.
Right.
But wait for it. I also want to keep Robert Williams.
Oh, that's
going to be the toughest part.
So
right
do
now.
Do you also want to keep Marcus Smart too?
Yes.
So you want Smart, Brown, Tatum, Rob, and Beal. You want to add Beal to that?
Salary wise, it does not work. I know. But I would like to try to keep Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and then also acquire Bradley Beal. So if that takes Marcus Smart, we're gonna have to do it. And I think any logical Celtics fan would say, yes, I will trade Marcus Smart and Tristan Thompson and a couple other filler salaries for Bradley Beal. Let's get it done and let's compete.
Well, yeah, I think the path for the Celtics to get Beal, should he become available, and it's an important qualification because right now he's absolutely not, right? Neither side.
Yeah, I think it's very important to note that Bradley Beal is not currently available, and there's no rumors indicating that he is on the move or available by any means. But
yeah, it's just like
we're just speculating.
Yeah,
speculating about the possibility of having best friends colliding on the same team.
Right. So in this alternate universe that Beal is available, the best chance for the Celtics is for him to say next year, because he's in the last year of his deal, he requests a trade and says, I want to play with Jason Tatum, basically. So it takes the leverage out of like half the teams in the league trying to trade for Beal, because he's in the last year of his deal, and teams giving up what's needed to get a player like Beal will want him to re-sign. So I think that's their best path, where they wouldn't have to include Jaylen Brown. I think they would eventually have to give up Robert Williams in that case, because he's the best young player they have right now. And then best case scenario, one of Neesmith or Langford start to show a little something, so you could throw them into the deal along with like Marcus Smart or Kemba Walkers and like all the first round picks you can think of.
So interesting, you just mentioned Kemba Walker. What do you think Kemba Walker should be moved, or at least, yeah, do you think Kemba Walker should be traded in a salary dump next year if this team doesn't really make a playoff push this year and kind of looks flat next season? Like when they come out of the gates, they're 5-5, they don't look good, Kemba looks flat. Do you think we should look to move him along with a young player and some assets to get a good player?
I think you got to think about it, just because, you know, the inconsistency is alarming. The knee problems are alarming. Even though he's looked pretty healthy this year, I'll say. Mm-hmm. But still, the inconsistency, the fit next to the Jays in terms of what the Jays are turning into, it's getting a little suspect over there. So, you got to think about it, especially if he doesn't turn it around and the team doesn't turn around, just because, you know, you don't want to be stuck with a worse version of what you're seeing next year on an even bigger number. I don't know what you're going to get for him if you try to trade him this offseason, because I can't imagine his value is very high. But, yeah, I think you definitely would have to think about moving him for you know, basically anything that you could get. If things don't improve.
Yeah, it's not ideal, and I really hope he picks it up and is able to find that role, because at first we were praying and hoping that he would just be able to, you know, play alongside the Jays and take that third option role. But it kind of seems like he's not able to hunt his shots the same way, and it's unnatural for him, and I understand that, but it's at this point, when you're playing in Boston, title town, there's expectations, and there's certain qualifications you need to be a star in Boston, and I just don't know if he's going to be able to really like carry that load at 30 years old with, you know, less healthy knees, and like we always talk about off air, you know, small guards with knee problems, they don't age well, and
no.
Kemba's at that age, so we have to make a decision. And hindsight's 20/20, but you know, paying him $34 million a year probably wasn't the best idea. But what were we supposed to do?
I mean, yeah, I mean,
he was coming off a career year,
and it kept the Celtics in the hunt, right? I mean,
exactly.
If you go into next year without him and with, you know, Marcus Smart as your starting point guard, you probably don't get to the conference finals.
Yeah, like if we do what we did next year, like we did this year with, you know, not having Gordon Hayward and not replacing it with anybody, if we do that next year by, well, we don't have Kemba Walker anymore, but we also don't have anybody else, it's just Marcus Smart running the point and Evan Fournier sliding into the second spot because we had to re-sign him. Like, what is that going to look like for our team? Would Marcus Smart in a starting point guard role be better for the team? Because honestly, sometimes when I see him out there, like obviously not last game against the Bucks, because he looked really bad.
Shooting
was bad. There. Yeah. He was trying to get into rhythm, I think. But I think in a starting role where he's the main point guard, we saw earlier on in the season where he was making the right plays. His assist numbers were up. And he just looked comfortable, like running the starting role. So, what are your thoughts there? Like, do you think that Marcus can be that point guard, or do you think, along with Kemba, his time is almost running out in Boston?
No, I think Smart can be like the lead ball handler. I think we've seen him. He can do that, especially with the leaps that Tatum and Brown are making as secondary playmakers. I think there's plenty of that to go around. I think it's what you surround him with, right? I mean, if you have Smart as the point guard and Tatum and Brown on the wing with Rob at center, you probably need another scoring type. I mean, maybe that's Fournier, right? Maybe if they bring him back on like a 3-year, $40-50 million contract, you know, you could do that with Fournier.
Yeah, and I was thinking like Evan Fournier, like 3 years, $40 million, like $14 million a year. Like, I feel like that should get it done, especially if he wants to, like he kind of noted in his press conference with Orlando, like he was there for, what, 8 years, and he had never been in more than one place for, you know, 2 years. So, like, yeah. He wants to kind of find that home. So, if that's what he wants, resign on a nice team-friendly deal. Help us, you know, bring a championship to Boston. We just got to take steps into the right direction.
Mm-hmm. It just depends how he plays, because, like, you saw last offseason, you saw Joe Harris get $75 million, something like
that. Yeah, I was skeptical $70 million. About that. I didn't think he was worth $20 million a year, but...
Yeah, and then you saw Davis Bertans get 80. So, I mean, shooting, people pay for shooting. People pay a lot of money for shooting, and it's a summer where teams have cap space and not a lot of free agents. But, I mean, we'll see. If he comes in, averages near 20 points a game with this team, and it helps them a lot, he's gonna demand a pretty penny, as they would say.
Yeah, I think the best help for this team right now is with shooting.
Yeah.
So in this offseason, we'll close up with this. What's one player you'd like to see the Celtics get in the offseason, along with re-signing Evan Fournier? Let's just say they sign Evan Fournier to a longer-term deal. Everybody kind of sticks around, but they waive Cornette. They don't bring back Mo Wagner. What do you think the Celtics can do to kind of keep their roster afloat and contend next year?
I think Fournier would have to be a re-sign, because then this trade is kind of a disaster if he doesn't.
Is it a disaster, though? Because, like, I feel like at the end of the day, you gave up 2 second-round picks, and then if Evan Fournier doesn't resign, doesn't that turn into a TPE?
If you can get the sign and trade done,
if you do the sign and trade, then you can turn that TPE into another TPE and it just extend that life.
It's just going to be endless TPEs.
Yeah, endless TPE. It's the Boston TPE party here.
That's a good one. So, so you use $17 million of the biggest trade exception of all time on a guy. Like, yeah, you gave up 2 second-round picks. That's going to soften the blow if he doesn't come back. But if you, like Danny Ainge talked about before they traded for Fournier, that they weren't exactly interested in guys who were going to be free agents because they wanted to extend the life of the exception. So if you're not extending the life of the exception with Fournier, then it's just $17 million down the tube for 30 games on a team that's probably not going to win the title. So it's that would just mark disaster for me in terms of just like, because you lost Gordon Hayward for that trade exception. So it's like Gordon Hayward for Evan Fournier, but if you can't turn Evan Fournier into something, I remember the narrative all summer was like, or all fall, because it wasn't the summer.
Yeah,
it was that the Celtics lost Hayward for nothing. And it was like, no, they have this exception. Well, if they lose Fournier, they really did lose Hayward for nothing. So
yeah, that's kind of like when it hits
compounding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been weighing on us for a while.
Right. But a player I'd like to see, I mean, just with that TPE, I like Larry Nance a lot, to be, you know, that versatile forward that can play the 3, the 4, maybe a little bit of 5, can shoot, can pass a little bit. He makes $10 million next year, $9 million the year after that. I think that's the kind of guy. I mean, we'll see if the Cavs want to give him up, but I think that's the kind of guy that would be towards the top of my list. Other than that, if we'll see who becomes available, but there's, like you said, not a lot of guys of consequence that make less than $11 million. So I would temper your expectations for the rest of this TPE, which is also a reason why Fournier has to hit and stay.
Yeah, I think he's going to hit too, because I think shooting just doesn't go away. He's fairly young. He's not injury prone. He's a guy that's definitely going to come in and provide shooting and scoring off the bench. And I think we just got to see where it goes. But as far as the offseason, I just want to get Wayne Ellington, man. Wayne Ellington or an Alec Burks, just a guy that can shoot off the bench for like $2-3 million.
That is within the realm of possibility. And I like both of those players, so that would make sense to me too.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, we talked about a lot today on the podcast. We went over the Evan Fournier trade, losing Daniel Tice, but setting ourselves up for the future by not, you know, going too far into the tax. And then we also talked about the buyout market and as well as the TPE.
The Boston one last TPE thing. Party.
Yeah, yes, the Boston TPE party we are. But one last thing to wrap up with. We got the Bucks tonight. What are your thoughts on the game? We lost last time, what, by two?
Yeah.
What do you think? And hey, we traded the guy who didn't tie the game for a guy who hit a buzzer beater that same night and beat the Suns.
Yeah, that's the...
That's the trade-off.
Yeah, so just trade for guys who make game winners.
And yeah, so we lost to the Bucks. Now we can beat the Bucks with a buzzer beater. How's that sound?
Yeah. I would just recommend that the Celtics don't fall behind by 25 points in the second half. I think that is a good strategy to have. Mm-hmm. They're going to be shorthanded because Tice isn't there right now. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a lot of Rob.
Mo Wagner traveled with the team, apparently. Or he didn't travel with the team. He met the team, actually, in Milwaukee.
Yeah, so maybe you see a little bit of Mo. But either way, you only have two bigs plus Grant. Yeah, so.
Well, I think Grant might get some minutes tonight then.
Or some taco time. But
Taco baby.
I wouldn't expect a win just because the Bucks are really good and they're rolling right now. But if they can kind of build off of their comeback from the other night and maybe a little bit of life was injected into them with just the idea that they're getting some reinforcements. So maybe they turn it around. It's definitely a game worth watching. I would encourage people to watch this one.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch this one. Game starts at 7:45.
7:45. Yeah.
Yeah. Celtics are
a minute delay.
Yeah, right. There's always that 15-minute delay. I gotta let you guys know. Celtics are not favored in this one. Bucks are actually favored by 6. The over/under is set at 233.5.
So what you got?
I'm gonna take the Bucks -6 in this one, and I don't want to touch the over/under in this one. I have no idea what the scoring is gonna be like. I think all season we've seen that we have no idea what this team is gonna bring offensively. Especially with Daniel Tice out, so not with us anymore. He didn't die, but
Daniel Tice no longer with us.
Gone, but not forgotten.
No longer with the Celtics, bricking threes off of pick and pops.
The war on Tice has ended, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, the rest.
At least in Boston. At least in Boston. Well, actually, we might actually get to be the beneficiary of the war on Tice now.
No,
I just realized. No, we still get screwed over.
Yeah, I think that's – there's no way. There's no – like, watching the Celtics over the last 2 years, there's no way they're going to get the good – like, it's not a war on Tice. It's just everything that he embodies, right? So whatever side you are on the – like, if you're against Tice or you're with Tice, the Celtics always seem to be on the wrong side of it.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter what he did, good or bad, he would get the shit end of the stick on that one.
Right.
But thank you for joining us, Mike. It's been a pleasure to have you on the pod. We look forward to having you on again. Next on the show.
I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. next on the show, Jeff is going to be back. He's going to be back after his hiatus. And we're going to talk more Celtics. So make sure to subscribe to the Celtics Journal podcast. Leave us a rate, 5-star rating, written review. The more reviews you leave, the greater chance that we do more jersey giveaways and more overall giveaways on our social media accounts. But from all of us here at the Celtics Journal, this is Adam Kemp, and thank you for listening to our takes. See you next time.